From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. This year, an estimated 12 million Latinos are expected to cast their votes to help choose this country's next president. But it wasn't that long ago when Latinos were denied that most basic of democratic rights. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 changed the laws, but it still took the work of one man, one leader, to transform those laws into reality.
I know that the Constitution is a live, breathing document because I've seen it work. We're bringing true democracy, the way it ought to be, to West Texas.
Today on the program, we celebrate the legacy of a man you should know, Willie Velazquez, and we'll take a look at how his pioneering work is helping to shape the election of 2008. Plus, Latino high school students compete in the Chicano College Bowl. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
This is news from Latino USA. I'm Lakshmi Singh. Members of the European Union are close to an agreement that would end sanctions against the communist island of Cuba, putting the EU at odds with U.S.-Cuba policy. Joining us to talk about this and other news of the week affecting the Latino community is Univision's national news anchor, Maria Elena Salinas. Hola, Maria Elena.
Hello, Lakshmi. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. These EU sanctions against Cuba, let's clear this up. They were passed in 2003 after then-Cuban leader Fidel Castro's crackdown on dissent. Why now? Why is the EU interested in setting aside those sanctions now?
Well, the European Union leaders are considering lifting these sanctions and opening up a new dialogue with Cuba, basically because there's a new leadership in Cuba. The sanctions had already been suspended in 2005, but they're hoping that doing away with them completely might help the new Cuban government to go further in making real changes. They are taking into consideration the fact that since Fidel's retirement and Raul Castro's taking over the government, they've opened up a little bit. They've allowed Cubans to buy certain products like cell phones, computers, but some of the European leaders are saying we should be allowed to meet with Cuban leaders and express our concerns on human rights abuses and not just allow for this to be a cosmetic change.
This issue was raised at the EU-US summit in Slovenia. And as many expected, President Bush took a tougher line, saying, if the Castro administration really is different, the first way to show it is to free political prisoners. How much do you think that message resonates with Cuban-American voters this year?
Well, with Cuban-American voters, it still is an issue. But, you know, things have been changing a lot. The political landscape here is a little bit different. You have a new generation of Cubans that consider other issues important also. I don't think they want that hard line anymore. I think that they also want the softening up, but nobody wants to do it without any conditions.
Moving on, Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey this week gave a speech on the Senate floor denouncing immigration raids as a, quote, witch hunt against Hispanic Americans and other people of color. Maria Elena, what more can you tell us about Senator Menendez's crusade here?
You hear immigrants complaining and immigration advocates that have been complaining for such a long time about these witch hunts, about how blatantly these raids are so out of control and it's so overtly racial profiling, yet our political leaders have not done much about it. He said we need to face a blunt reality. Our desire to control our borders has often turned into a witch hunt, and it's true. One of his quotes that I loved is he said, before we accuse someone of being undocumented, there's another document that we need to inspect first, and that is called the Constitution of the United States. He cited two particular cases, one of a U.S. citizen and the other case of a legal resident in the state of New Jersey that were picked up by immigration. I believe they came and knocked their door without a warrant and arrested them. And cases like that, you know, we've seen all over the country. That is certainly one of the hot button issues that's going to resonate not only in Florida and in New Jersey, but all over the country.
This week, we're starting to see some major economic impact due to the latest scare. It's Salmonella scare from tomatoes. Millions of dollars of product are being unpicked. How bad do you think this is? And do you think it can get any worse?
You know, tomatoes are imported from several countries. They're from Guatemala, from the Dominican Republic. They're imported from Puerto Rico, also other countries, and produced in several states here in the country. But, you know, as the FDA looks for the origin of the breakout of Salmonella, you know, they've cleared most of the countries. They haven't cleared Mexico yet. And, you know, 80% of Mexico's tomato imports come to the U.S., it's a $900 million industry. So when something like this happens, it's a big blow to their economy. But this salmonella outbreak needs to be taken very seriously. The health of American consumers is at stake here. Now, as far as the industry here in the U.S., California and Florida are two of the major tomato-producing states. Their crops were beginning to rot during this investigation, but I believe they have already been cleared.
I'm just curious to find out, is there any relief for workers that are directly involved with picking these fruits and vegetables? When you have this kind of an economic impact, do you know of any relief
Not for
program?
The employees themselves. For the industry, there is. A lot of these people are day laborers or seasonal migrant workers who really don't have that many labor rights.
Okay, well, thank you, Maria Elena.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Maria Elena Salinas is a syndicated columnist and national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It's a name you might never have heard of before, but Willie Velazquez was one of the seminal figures to come out of the civil rights movement.
I know that the Constitution is a live, breathing document. It's not a dead letter. Don't tell me that it's a dead letter, because I've seen it work. I've seen it apply. We're bringing true democracy, the way it ought to be, to West Texas.
Velazquez cut his teeth as an activist in the 1960s by helping to organize farm workers in the Rio Grande Valley. He would then go on to found the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project to guarantee not only the voting rights of Latinos in the Southwest, but to educate and improve voter participation of all Latinos. On June 15, 1988, Willie Velazquez passed away at the early age of 44. But as Ernie Villarreal of Texas Public Radio reports, the legacy of Velazquez can still be felt today.
Jim Crow segregation was denying equal education and voting rights for many Mexican Americans in Texas and the Southwest when William, better known as Willie, Velazquez was growing up in the 1940s. Having experienced this discrimination led him to form the Southwest Voter Registration and Education Project in 1974. Through numerous voter registration drives, the number of Latino registered voters increased, which led to more Latinos elected to office. Rolando Rios, a voting rights attorney based in San Antonio, was the first legal director for the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. He says Velazquez was a tremendous leader who arrived on the scene when he was in college. In 1966, during his final semester of graduate studies at St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Velazquez helped organize the United Farm Workers in Texas's Rio Grande Valley during a time when forming such a union was thought impossible.
Because he was tremendously committed to democracy and to the impact that Latinos could have on the democratic process in America.
Rio says Velazquez asked him to join the organization because getting Latinos registered was only half the electoral problem, not only in Texas, but other states like New Mexico, Arizona, and California.
The other half of the problem was that the election systems themselves were discriminatory, so that even if you got everybody registered to vote, the Hispanics wouldn't be able to elect a candidate of the choice because they had systems like at-large elections, numbered posts, and things like that.
At-large elections tend to minimize minority representation and have been struck down under the Voting Rights Act. Even today, Rios is still fighting at-large election systems, like the one in the Texas Community of Farmers Branch, adjacent to Dallas.
They are not going to voluntarily change the system. You got to sue them. Like I said, Dallas, Houston, Fort Worth, they all had to be dragged to federal court, and they changed it, and things are better for that.
Juan Sepulveda is the author of the biography, The Life and Times of Willie Velazquez, Su Voto es Su Voz, and worked closely with Velazquez. No matter how many court battles were won, says Sepulveda, for Velazquez there was always one more voting rights injustice to correct or campaign to undertake.
At the end of the day, no matter how great we were doing, no matter how many elections we were winning, no matter how many lawsuits we would win, and we never lost any. For Willie, it was always, that's great. Now what's the next step? What's the next strategy?
Willie Velasquez's goals and strategies at Southwest Voter continue under current director Antonio Gonzalez. He says the impact of today's Latino voters was made possible by Willie's long-term vision.
You know, when Willie started, there were only 5 million Latinos in America. We're 50 million now. When he started, there were 1 million Latino registered voters. Now we're 12 million. So Willie had, like some of my friends like to say, he had those bright lights. He could see far. And, you know, people used to tell me he was crazy when Willie Velasquez would talk about how someday we will govern in America.
And Velasquez did become a national figure in the struggle for civil rights, not only because of his activism, but also for his eloquence.
He emerged as an activist within his community, a guy with enormous charisma, with great energy, and with a passion for empowering the Latino community in this country and getting them deeply and actively involved in the politics of their communities and state and country.
Former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis met Velasquez when both were at Harvard. He says Velasquez was an inspirational figure for all Americans, especially Hispanics. Dukakis was a Democratic Party nominee in June of 1988, and he asked Velasquez to introduce him at the Texas Democratic Convention. But 3 days before the convention, news came out that Willie had passed away.
It was just stunning and numbing, the best way I can describe it. I mean, you were just numb.
Velasquez had been diagnosed with kidney cancer just a month earlier. His sudden passing stunned everyone. Juan Sepulveda.
I think a lot of us just thought of Willie as a really strong person, and I think we were all shocked that it happened literally just a month later.
Sepulveda says that while Willie Velasquez may not have become a household name, the movement he started continues today, and his legacy lies in every voter registration drive, every defeat of an at-large electoral system, every redistricting that fairly gives minorities their voting rights.
You know, he used to say, we don't do voter registration by press conference, because for him it was not about getting the attention, and I think part of the calculated strategy was not to make it about him, but to make it about the movement.
This year's Democratic primary showed just how important the Latino vote has become. While that may have surprised many political commentators, Willie Velasquez foresaw it long ago.
What do I say then about the future? It's the past. Whatever immigrant groups have done in the past, whatever has been their contribution, the Mexicans are going to do the same thing. And I'll bet you that when it comes time to add it all up and say, well, were the Mexicans up to it? I'll bet you that we will make the same contribution that all others did.
For Latino USA in San Antonio, I'm Ernie Villarreal.
During the presidential primaries, Latino voters turned out in record numbers, and the majority voted for Senator Hillary Clinton. Her Latino outreach, say some observers, was as historic as her presidential run. But now that Senator Barack Obama is the presumptive Democratic nominee, and Clinton has pledged her support, will Hillary's Latinos, as they're called, follow her lead? Latino USA's Alex Avila has more.
Days after Barack Obama became the presumptive Democratic nominee, Tejano Democrats gathered at a local hangout in the state capital of Austin. The attendees were mostly Mexican-Americans and old-time Chicano activists, and most were in town for the state Democratic convention as delegates for Hillary Clinton. I asked them, how were they likely to vote in November? Diana Hernandez is an elementary school teacher in Austin.
I'm not going to vote for Obama. So I'm either going to not vote or go for McCain.
Thelma Peterson, a school teacher from El Paso, says she thought the same at first, but is beginning to think differently.
I do have an open mind. I didn't have one coming in, but I do now. After talking to a political
icon from El Paso, Texas, Belen Robles, and after talking to her right now for a couple of hours, I feel a little bit better about it.
At this gathering, Thelma's opinion is clearly in the minority, with many Latino delegates saying Obama's not their man. People like Susie Luna Saldana of Corpus Christi and Ray and Terry Moreno from Austin.
Well, it's kind of hard to trust somebody sometimes when you have somebody that has come out of nowhere. I mean, you didn't know the name Obama a few months ago.
But I still don't know who he is. He's a good debater, but that's all he is, a rock star.
I don't think he has a background. He's not ready to run the United States of America. He's not. I don't trust him.
Many observers believe Hillary's Latino supporters will come around, but the when and the how remain elusive.
Some won't, depending on age, depending on income, depending on education, depending on status in this country, a lot of things.
Earl Ofari Hutchinson is a columnist for New America Media.
For Obama, the likelihood is we'll get a substantial percentage of the Hillary Democratic Latino vote. On the other hand, some will not vote for him. The other little X factor is some hidden biases and prejudices against an African American.
One California poll found Latino support of Obama over McCain almost 2-1. But pollsters say when race is concerned, voters often say one thing publicly but act differently in the voting booth. And now with Hillary out and McCain as a known and admired candidate among Latinos, political observers say the Latino vote could very well be up for grabs in November. Pollster Sergio Pendixon was chief Hispanic strategist for the Hillary campaign.
McCain is liked among Latinos, but he has an Achilles heel, which is association with the Republican Party. The Republican Party has a very negative image among Hispanic voters and among all Hispanics in the United States because of the rhetoric and the anti-immigrant, anti-Hispanic message that it communicated over the last 2 years.
Republicans disagree.
We are not sheep that are going to be led down one path.
Lionel Sosa is co-chair of the McCain Advertising Council, helping to develop the campaign's political ads. He says what helps Republicans make inroads in the Latino community is that many Latinos often vote for the individual, not the party.
So we never try to get them to switch parties. We put the record out there, and if we do it correctly, then the message will be this particular individual is well qualified. You know him, you trust him to be the very best leader out there.
Former Transportation Secretary Federico Peña, national co-chair of Obama for America, says the campaign is working hard to get Clinton supporters on their side and is confident they'll come on board.
Well, generally speaking, the answer is yes. Now, I must say that I have had 10 or 15 personal conversations with very high-ranking Latinos. They're all on board. They want to support Barack, and they're going to work very hard to get both Barack elected as our next president. We're not going to take for granted that just because we have the support of Latino elected officials and community leaders, that automatically translates into the average Latino. We're going to have to do a lot of work in the community.
Pilar Marrero, a political writer for La Opinion newspaper, says she's heard such rhetoric before.
I kind of get from the Obama people that they get it, that they know they need to do it. And we'll see if they do it, if they put the money where their mouth is, which is what Kerry and Gore didn't do. They said they were going after the Latino vote, but they didn't spend money on it.
So who will Hillary's Latino supporters go for in November? The best answer, perhaps, came from Republican activist Lionel Sosa.
The candidate that makes the best effort will be the candidate that takes the Latino vote.
For Latino USA, I'm Alex Avila.
In a minute, Latino high school students compete in the Chicano College Bowl. Coming up on Latino USA, no se vayan. We'll be right back. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Not since Ted Kennedy campaigned on the island in 1980 had Puerto Rico been the center of so much attention. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama put Puerto Rican issues back on the national map. But just as important to many residents of the island was the issue of politicking style, that is, politics Boricua style. Latino USA's Carol King found out just what that means and exactly what Puerto Ricans are hoping for now in November.
If you were in the port city of Ponce or in and around the capital, in Rio Piedras, Atorre, or maybe Barrio Obrero, in the days counting down to Puerto Rico's primary, these were the sounds you might hear. Politics Puerto Rico style, or as islanders say, Boricua style, means fiesta, food, and más fiesta. As one candidate put it, it's like one big Puerto Rican Day parade, and this time, estilo presidencial, with a little Secret Service and autograph hunting thrown in, as when Bill Clinton campaigned for Hillary in La Calle Fortaleza. Or like a contest for the best reggaeton or merengue campaign jingle. Or for the best Spanish speaker or honorary islander.
Soy Barack Obama y yo apruebo este mensaje.
Nací en una isla y entiendo que la comida, la gasolina...
With Barack Obama now considered the winning nominee on the U.S. mainland, many Puerto Ricans say they hope Hillary will still run with him, even knowing, as Maribel Vega says, that Commonwealth status does not let them vote in the national elections.
Sí, que tengamos la oportunidad de votar también en noviembre.
So why not let us vote in November, too? I know it's impossible because it's not in the Constitution, but our voting in the primary is a step in the right direction.
Es importante las primarias, es un paso que estamos dando.
For Latino USA, I'm Carol King, in Old San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Cesar Chavez, the Zoot Suit Riots, the East L.A. Walkouts, the Chicano Movement. The history of Mexican Americans is rich with accomplishment and contribution. But you probably wouldn't know that unless you took a college course in Mexican American Studies or you competed in the Chicago area Cinco de Mayo College Bowl. Begun at Chicago's Highland Park High School 11 years ago, the Cinco de Mayo College Bowl now includes a dozen area schools and 60 team members, all vying to be city champions and in the process develop a love for learning. From Chicago, contributor Jennifer Brandel has this report.
A few hundred Latino teenagers are bouncing in the auditorium seats of Chicago's suburban Highland Park High School. Most of them are there to cheer on their classmates and for the dinner and dancing that follows the 11th annual Cinco de Mayo College Bowl. But about 60 of them are there to answer their way into academic glory.
Ever see so much enthusiasm over history?
That's Dr. Carlos Vasquez, Director of History and Literary Arts at the National Hispanic Cultural Center and keynote speaker of this year's College Bowl.
40 years ago, I never would have thought that the movement would be as strong in terms of its emotion, in terms of its understanding, in terms of its commitment, as it is here in the Midwest. We used to be a Southwest phenomenon. We're not a Southwest phenomenon anymore.
Before this, I was doing pretty bad in school. I'm not going to lie about that, you know. I was getting bad grades, but like now, with like seeing all the effort they put forward makes me, you know, actually try harder in school. And right now I'm doing fairly well with my grades.
That's Junior Varsity College Bowl competitor Marco Alonso. He says in studying the effort and the struggles of his people, school has suddenly become a personal experience that is actually relevant to his life.
Basically, it gives me more positive effects because I used to think like too negative about things. Like if I couldn't do something... Like, it doesn't matter what it would be about. If I didn't know how to do something or couldn't do something, I would just give up. And now, like, with all this, like, seeing how much they had to struggle through it, like, if I can't do something, it makes me, like, work harder at it so I actually get to where I want to get.
This empowerment is exactly what Highland Park teachers Jonathan Wieland and Luis Vasquez were hoping to achieve when they created the bowl over a decade ago.
We go out and I grab my students and I cajole them and harangue them until they give in and at least watch the videos. And then usually if they could, we could get them to watch the videos once, they could get pretty hooked.
That's Jonathan Wieland. And the videos he and Vasquez use as a lure for Latino students are from Chicano, a 1990s PBS series that chronicles the history of the Mexican-American civil rights movement. Like so many students, senior Tatiana Alonso says these videos are emotionally gripping.
I love watching the videos. Every time I watch them, I like want to cry because they're truly inspiring.
They're so inspiring, in fact, that Wieland and Vasquez created the entire competition from the video's content. They then solicited other Chicago area schools and Latino student clubs to join them in the College Bowl.
One of the things that I've always regretted as an active participant in the Chicano movement was our lack of attention to history. We didn't know anything about the Lemon Grove incident or the Westminster case in the field of education and felt that what we were doing was somehow groundbreaking when in fact we could have gotten a lot further had we built on the shoulders of those movements rather than digging up the earth all over again.
Dr. Vasquez underscores that this Midwestern Bowl is especially significant because it's proof that Mexican immigrants are not a regional phenomenon anymore. He cites the 2006 May Day March in Chicago that drew over a million Latinos to the streets as a realization of organizing for change.
Latinos are going to be the future. We're going to be the future leaders. We're going to be there. One of us is going to be there, be the President of the United States. We're not going to take over, but we're going to bring our power out and show who we are.
Competitor Angelica Escobar says studying this history has shown her the value of working together with fellow Latinos, inspired newfound pride in her heritage, and given her the confidence to stand out.
I want to be somebody in my life. I don't want to be a nobody, but I want to be something in my life.
Many Cinco de Mayo College Bowl alums have gone on to become advocates for the Latino community. The hope is that this competition will continue to galvanize the generations to come. For Latino USA, I'm Jennifer Brandel.
This year's Cinco de Mayo College Bowl was held on May 9th, and the 2008 varsity and junior varsity championship teams were from Mundelein and Highland Park High Schools. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Thanks for listening. Latino USA is produced by Angela Maldonado, Alex Avila, Walter Morgan, and Benjamin Jacob. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. We had help this week from Jorge Olivares, Jordan Witt, and Patricia Guadalupe. To listen to our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533. Our email is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.